Hey, it's Bill Simmons. I wanted to tell you about the launch of our new YouTube channel. It's called Ringer Movies. You can follow us right now on YouTube at Ringer Movies to get full video episodes of the rewatchables and the big picture, plus a lot of our archives with much more coming soon. To celebrate the launch, we're going live on Monday, May 13th at noon Pacific with our first ever live rewatchables with me and Sean Fennessy and Chris Ryan and Van Lathan. Follow Ringer Movies on YouTube so you don't miss it. YouTube.com/Ringer Movies.
This episode of The Town is brought to you by FX's Feud, Capote versus the Swans. The second installment in Ryan Murphy's Feud anthology tells the story of acclaimed writer Truman Capote, once a confidant to society's most elite women, whom he nicknamed the Swans. Starring Naomi Watts, Diane Lane, Chloe Sevigny, Calista Flockhart, Demi Moore, Molly Ringwald, and Tom Hollander. For your Emmy consideration, visit fxnetworks.com/FYC. This episode is brought to you by Netflix, presenting The Crown, as the beloved series bids farewell. Deserving of praise on every level, says New York Magazine. Throughout its groundbreaking six-season run, The Crown has featured three different casts, earned 273 award nominations, and secured 70 award wins, including Outstanding Drama Series. Critics rave, The Crown secures its place in the pantheon of television history. From creator and writer Peter Morgan, the final season stars Imelda Staunton, Dominic West, and SAG Award winner Elizabeth Debicki. The Crown, for your Emmy consideration in all categories. It is Wednesday, May 8th. There's a lot of reasons why Peacock has never really been taken as seriously as some of the others in these streaming wars. The content offering wasn't great when it launched in 2020. Its owner, NBC Universal, has a parent company in Comcast that is very invested in the cable bundle. It's U.S. only, and it really had trouble generating an audience for much of anything for years. But slowly, the Peacock offering has gotten a lot better, and the financial metrics are catching up. Comcast recently revealed they're now at 34 million paying subscribers. That's way up over the last year, and a gain of 3 million subs last quarter, thanks in part to that exclusive NFL wildcard game that generated a lot of interest online and really pissed off fans like Craig. They've got a bunch of originals now, all the NBC and Bravo shows, and the first window on Universal movies like Oppenheimer and The Minions. And this summer, Peacock is the exclusive digital home of the Olympics in Paris. It's probably why they're raising prices by $2 across the board, following the other streamers on those price hikes. Seems like a good time to do it, though. In March, Peacock generated 1.3% of TV viewership in the U.S., according to Nielsen. That's the same as Max and bigger than Paramount Plus, getting close to Disney Plus. And Peacock was selling ads on an ad tier back when Netflix and Disney said they never would. So they've got a head start on the area of the business that most people care about in streaming right now, especially heading into the TV upfronts later this month, where the networks and streamers sell a ton of ad commitments. But it's not all great news for Peacock. It's still sort of an also-ran, which is why we've got Kelly Campbell on the show today to discuss. She's the business side head of Peacock, has been there for 3 years. She's not making the shows, but I wanted to have her on because Lucas and I started half-joking about how it's the year of Peacock. She clearly agrees. Before this job, Kelly had a similar role at Hulu, and before that, she was a big marketing executive at Google, so she brings that tech background to the traditional Hollywood company. We chatted about a bunch of stuff, the plans for the Olympics, the possibility of a joint venture with Paramount Plus or Max, the fact that somehow Peacock doesn't know that I watch SNL every Sunday morning. It's infuriating. So today it's Kelly Campbell and the year of Peacock, question mark? From The Ringer and Puck, I'm Matt Bellany, and this is The Town. All right, we are here with Kelly Campbell, who is president of Peacock and direct consumer at NBC Universal. Welcome, Kelly.
Thanks, Matt.
All right, so we have wanted to have you on the show for a while now. Lucas and I were joking at the beginning of the year that it's the year of Peacock, although it's a little bit more nuanced than that. We were kind of half tongue-in-cheek, half not. Peacock, I feel like, has been the punching bag of the streaming race. For various reasons, I think it launched as kind of an ad-supported slash subscription product that was, it felt for many that it was kind of Comcast being dragged into the streaming wars. But now that ad-supported tier that Peacock has always had, that's looking pretty smart.
That is true. When you kind of put this in perspective, you know, Peacock entered this noisy, crowded, competitive market only 4 years ago. And in that time, we've grown quite a bit. So when you think about sort of where to tease out the sort of origin of that growth, it comes down to a couple of things. As you mentioned, we launched with an advertising business, with a dual revenue business model, and that's paying off. It's fueling our business growth. And we also have a robust mix of premium content that really differentiates Peacock in the market, and that's fueling the consumer growth. There's so much noise in this market. We've stayed focused on that business model. We've continued to invest in that premium content mix, and it's paying off.
So you're about to raise prices again. And I noticed that the prices are about to go up in mid-July, which happens to be right when the Olympics are coming to Peacock. What is the calculus internally about those price increases? What kind of studies do you guys do that tell you the market is tolerant of price increases and you're only going to lose X amount, or you're underpriced as compared to this service or that service? We're looking at $8 a month for Peacock Premium and then $14 a month for Premium Plus, which is the mostly ad-free tier.
Right. I would say this is about Peacock putting a price in the market that reflects the value we bring to consumers. So originally we were priced to scale. We've been investing since that time in our content and in our platform. And when you look at what we offer relative to our competitors, when you look at that mix of premium content, it's not just entertainment content, which is incredibly powerful for us. It is also sports content. We had live sports on more than 300 days last year. We have more live sports than any other streamer, more than 5,000 hours of sports programming. That is a clear differentiator for us. And that combined with our entertainment offering across film and television is really more reflective of the value in the new price point. And you mentioned the Olympics, Matt. So when the price point goes into effect for existing customers, it actually goes into effect after the Olympics. For new customers, it goes into effect before the Olympics. But again, it's really pricing the product at a value that we think is still incomparable when you look at our competitors in the market.
I bet there's a big chunk of people that would pay $8 a month for Sunday Night Football alone. I mean, that, and then all the other stuff on top. Pardon my French here, but I was talking to someone high up at your parent company after the last Olympic Games. And this person said, "We really shit the bed on Peacock for these Olympics." Did not get the bump that you guys had anticipated. And I know the service was young at the time and not as coordinated internally, but what do you plan to do differently this time for the Olympics to capture more subscribers and, more importantly, to keep them once the Olympics are done?
This is the first time in history that the consumer will have one place to go for all of the Olympics content. We are literally putting all of the Olympics on Peacock. And then on top of that, we've taken all of our learnings from prior Olympics, from prior live events, and we've funneled that into the experience. So that's everything from you can expect improved search and navigation in the experience during the Olympics. We're launching a couple of new features. We'll have Discovery Multiview. Think of it as like multi-view that you'd expect elsewhere, but tailored for the Olympics. We're going to have live schedules for people to access. We're also going to have original content that's only available on Peacock. So we'll have the Gold Zone, which is a fan favorite when it comes to sports.
Is that like Red Zone?
Exactly. And we'll have a feature called Live Action where you can be watching Live Zone and Gold Zone and then sort of choose your own adventure and come out of Gold Zone into if there's a sport that's being featured in Gold Zone that you want to stick with, whether that's, you know, gymnastics, for example. And then on the content front, in addition to Gold Zone, we've got Alex Cooper coming to cover women's sports with us. And just yesterday, we announced Kenan Thompson and Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart will be back and they will cover the Olympics exclusively for Peacock.
Alex Cooper, like call her daddy, Alex Cooper?
That is correct.
That should be great. We'll learn more about these athletes than we ever wanted to know.
True.
Yeah. I mean, you should have like a push alert for world records about to be broken. Like world record race. So this person could break the world record. I would definitely tune in for that.
Yeah, and when that like multi-view will call your attention to, if you've got three things on at once, you can see, oh, this is a medal round, for example, or this is, you know, potential world record being broken. So that's the intent of the tailored multi-view experience.
So how do you keep these people? I mean, the Olympics famously, the sort of justification for the outrageous prices that NBC Universal pays for these rights has always been, yes, we get the audience, but we also use it as a platform to launch our fall schedule and our, you know, all of our other stuff. And obviously the fall schedule is not what it once was. How is Peacock going to keep these people around? I mean, we saw the 3 million number. Peacock gained 3 million subs this past quarter, and that was the quarter of the NFL wildcard game exclusive on Peacock, which I think did sign up. And you didn't reveal how many of those signups you got and how many you retained. You just said that it was more than you expected. But what did you learn from that wildcard game? And how do you expect to keep people after the Olympics?
So the wildcard game brought in a huge amount of new subscribers.
And angry tweets. Huge amount of angry tweets from NFL fans. What the fuck is Peacock?
And so the thing with that swing and making the investment in that NFL exclusive game was that we had the conviction to do it, because when you think of it as a huge sampling opportunity, we had the belief that people are going to come into that game and then they're going to have the opportunity to discover all that is on Peacock. So at this point, we've retained the vast majority of the folks who came into that game. So we're going to take the learnings from the NFL game and from other live events, and we're going to use those when it comes to keeping our Olympics cohort engaged. And also, one of the things to note about the NFL game is that that was our biggest day when it comes to live viewership. But the day after the game was Peacock's biggest day when it comes to on-demand viewership. So live viewership for the Olympics, you know, we're hoping to translate into, you know, another burst in viewership.
Interesting. I mean, it does raise the question, though, of whether you can, I mean, this is sort of a crude way of saying it, but can you stunt your way to subscriber growth in the streaming world? I mean, the value proposition for Netflix and Amazon and those mega platforms is that it's a steady stream of new. Come here and there's going to be something. And it feels like with Peacock, you do have that steady stream of something. And obviously sports is the best version of that. But when you have these big moments, they feel a little bit like stunts to people. How do you keep that momentum going?
Here's the thing. You can stunt your way into it if you have the robust mix of content that we have on the other side to capture the people who come in from that moment. And that's exactly what our strategy is. You use the big thing to hook the subscribers, they come in, and then it's our job to expose them to everything else that is on Peacock and the experience of, you know, engaging with this type of content on Peacock. And we have, you know, the pay one window for Universal Films. So we're the first place that Universal Films and Focus Pictures go after they launch in theaters.
Oh, I know very well. My kid, like, he knows the Minions are on Peacock first. He, like, it's ingrained in his head.
Speaking of your household, you and I have talked before, but so you've got Minions, you've got Mario for your kids. I know you're watching a lot of sports. You've mentioned SNL before. You've told me that your wife is a big fan of Bravo. She is not alone, and your household is not unique.
Okay, but the SNL thing brings up the tech issue I have with Peacock. I mainly go to Peacock to watch SNL the next day, the next morning. The tech does not know me. Every time I go, SNL is hidden. I have to go to search for it. Why does the tech behind Peacock not know immediately that I am likely on a Sunday morning going to the platform to watch SNL?
I've heard you say this before.
Yeah, this may not be your job, but just answer for it anyway.
I am intimately familiar with how the product works, believe me. As a weekly show, we do put SNL in the hero image, you know, while it's airing because it's simulcast. And then the next day in the hero image, it should also be showing up in your continue watching. And look, personalization is complex. It is an area that we have invested a lot in. It's improved pretty dramatically in the last few years. And when you see, you know, the rise of some of the sort of data and AI capabilities, it's continued. We have releases every week that improve personalization on Peacock.
Okay. So the answer is it's me, not you.
I gotta get your username and look into this.
You please do. Yeah, nothing else is as important as that.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
This episode is brought to you by Thomas's.
Thomas's presents Pondering the Bagel with Tom.
Oh, the paradox of the bagel. Tis crunchy yet soft. Tis filling yet has a hole. Tis a vehicle for spreads, but only travels from toaster to plate. Thomas's, huzzah, a toast to breakfast.
I did see in your earnings release that your average revenue per subscriber in the quarter was about $10 per month. What is the breakdown now between subscriber revenue and advertising revenue? And are ad-driven customers still a lot more profitable than the people who are just subscribers and pay more?
We don't break out ARPU specifically, sub-ARPU versus ad ARPU. That being said, as I mentioned earlier, that dual revenue model is an important part of our strategy. And what's worth noting and really sets us apart from our competitors is that 80% of our customers are on an ad-supported tier. So that is a healthy, thriving business for us.
And way bigger than Netflix.
Exactly. Way bigger than our competitors. And NBCU is doing it for, 100 years. And so we're miles ahead of where anyone else in the streaming industry is when it comes to advertising.
You know, as we are taping this, there is a lot of speculation about where the NBA rights are going to land. And I know that that is above your pay grade, above mine. We don't know exactly how that's going to play out. You may, I don't. But assuming NBCU, NBC and Comcast and Peacock get a package of NBA rights, isn't that going to require you to reduce your content budget because a big chunk of it is going to go to these NBA rights? And that's sort of why Netflix has said they don't want a big sports package, because they have a certain amount of money that they spend on content that their customers are liking and that they are growing with. And they don't want to devote so much of it to a sports package. Are you looking at this saying, oh man, what are we going to do without once if this happens?
As we look at the market now and, the rights that you mentioned for NBA, yes, it's a big package and certainly will have us looking at our content strategy. But the reality is it's the mix of content on Peacock that really makes a difference for subscribers. And we're not going to lose our commitment to that. So sports, with or without the NBA, is a powerful pillar of what Peacock offers to the consumer. And on top of that, sports are a great acquisition hook. 9 out of 10 hours that someone who comes in for sports on Peacock watches our entertainment content. So we're not going to pull back from our investments in entertainment. We've got a leading offering when it comes to film. We've got the best next day content on the market with Bravo and NBC. We've got the best library on the market with shows like The Office. And our originals are on a roll. We're having great success there.
Yeah. How do you define a hit? Because you might say the originals are on a roll, but they very rarely chart on Nielsen. I think Traitors is pretty objectively a hit. People talk about that show. You see it on some of the charts that put out numbers. But very few of the Peacock shows are defined as hits in the larger streaming ecosystem. So what's a hit for you?
This has been a great year for Peacock when it comes to our originals. As you mentioned, Traitors is totally breaking through in the cultural zeitgeist. Poker Face is a show that we're incredibly proud of. It's done really well and actually was just nominated for a Peabody Award, which we're super excited for. We've got more returning series. So obviously Poker Face and Traitors are coming back. We also have Twisted Metal based on a true story. So more returning series than ever. And I mentioned Those About to Die, but our slate in the second half of the year is incredible. I am so excited for the shows that we're bringing forward. We have Fight Night coming this fall with Kevin Hart. We've got The Day of the Jackal starring Eddie Redmayne, who was just nominated for a Tony. And, we're not slowing down. We're continuing to invest and bring new stories to the market. And I think our progress in the first few years is pretty commendable. And I know what's coming. I could talk about that for the rest of our time together. And right. I think it's going to be really meaningful for Peacock.
So Hulu has experimented with putting some of the Hulu originals back on ABC, notably Only Murders in the Building. And they've done it with, you know, other channels in the Disney universe. What's your stance on that? Should Peacock be repurposing some of these originals back on NBC or some of the other platforms?
We've done a bunch of this. It's a time when consumer behavior is shifting in many ways. And so we're taking our content and looking for the right windowing strategy across Peacock and NBC and our cable networks.
Oh, so you've done that. You've done that before.
Yep. We've done it. And we continue to try new things.
You came from Google and were big ad exec there and then sort of transitioned over to the Hollywood hybrid units, first at Hulu and now at Peacock. What have you learned about the way that these two industries operate differently? The same? Is it night and day? Are they of a piece? What's different about Google and a company like NBCU when it comes to monetizing digital audiences?
So when it comes down to it, we're all competing for consumer time and consumer wallet.
Although you're presuming it is a competition. I think Google would say that competition has long been won by the tech giants, but continue.
When you break it down into categories, yes, there's very clearly a broader sort of digital footprint that Google and YouTube have long played in. Streaming, you know, entered the market in the last 10, 15 years from an advertising perspective. Fast forward, Peacock entered the market just 4 years ago. And when you look at the capabilities, you know, targeting capabilities, data capabilities, that's where I think, you know, you really see some of the benefits of learnings from the tech industry come to life in the entertainment space. And that is one of the great things about advertising with Peacock, which should be a total no-brainer for brands, because not only are you reaching that engaged audience, those 80% of subs who are choosing that ad-supported tier, but you're also getting the power of NBC Universal, right, which is not new to the space. So you're getting some of the benefits that sort of were built up through that digital landscape on the tech side, but you're also getting all the benefits of, you know, the reach in the linear space.
And that's obviously your pitch. What about internally, just the corporate cultures?
One of the things that surprised me is just the scrappiness. I feel like in tech, there was a healthy regard for a scrappy culture. And I see that in streaming. You know, I think I expected entertainment to be a bit more traditional in how things get done. But there's a scrappiness and a sort of innovative spirit that is very true at Peacock. It's very true at NBC and it's very true at Comcast, which really excited me coming in the front door.
So Peacock in 5 years, what is success for you?
Growth. We want to be one of the top three consumer choices for entertainment.
Okay. That's not bad. That's a good goal.
I will say one thing Peacock's done really well is we've stayed very focused amidst all of the happenings in the market. We have the luxury of being part of NBC Universal and Comcast, which gives us some air cover to stay focused. And, you know, ultimately, we intend very much to fulfill that long-term business strategy and have staying power and be one of those top three choices.
And a joint venture with a Paramount Plus or Max, do you see that happening?
I'm not going to speculate on M&A activity. I will say, as we heard on our earnings last week, our company is really committed to investing our capital into growth businesses. Peacock is clearly a growth business, and we're clearly making strides towards our business plan and towards our consumer growth targets. And I think we'll continue to see that investment.
Hmm. Maybe if you merge with Paramount Plus, there could be a Fast and Furious show written by Taylor Sheridan.
I think when you break it down, that like we feel good with what we have. We are well positioned as a business. We have a healthy, engaged subscriber base that is growing. We have the mix of content. We have the technology platform. We feel good about the hand we have, and we're continue pushing forward.
Well, it's the year of Peacock. You heard it here first, and I'm now going to be blurbed at your upfront, I'm sure. But I'm looking forward to the Olympics, to be honest. I think this is going to be actually good. I want one space. I don't want to have to flip around to random channels like Oxygen and USA that I never go to watch obscure sports. I want it all in front of me with push alerts whenever somebody could break a world record.
We hear you.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate the time.
Thanks, Matt.
We are back with the call sheet. Craig, I know you follow all the earnings reports very closely. Did you follow the Disney reveal yesterday?
That's an unnecessary dig out of you. Testy this morning?
I am a little testy, yeah. So that's a no.
I saw the stock was down heavily.
The stock was down. The stock market sucks, man. You know, like one little comment by the CFO that the guidance for theme parks and streaming in the next quarter is a little softer than the market wanted, and all of a sudden the stock's down 10%.
Yeah, that's why I stick to sports gambling.
Exactly. Much more reliable, much more predictable. Disney, pretty good earnings. Small profit in streaming. That's the big news. Disney Plus and Hulu, good for them. All the cost cutting is finally coming home to roost. The TV networks continue to crater, down 8%. The parks are doing great, but they forecasted a little softer. Disneyland did not have as strong profits last quarter as they thought. Disney Plus Core, they call it. They're streaming excluding India. They were up 6.3 million subscribers, up to 117 million. Revenue per user rose 6% globally. Thank you, price hikes. Disney also said that an ESPN tile is coming to Disney Plus with a few exclusive games by the end of 2024, which is a ramp up on the timeline of incorporating ESPN into their core streaming offering. Pretty good.
Did they specify which types of games?
No, they did not. Although that is my prediction today. My prediction is that by next June, they will have integrated ESPN so much that you will be able to watch the NBA Finals on the new ESPN direct-to-consumer over-the-top service by summer of 2025.
But you're not saying exclusively. They want exclusively.
Oh, no.
They'll also be on cable.
No, but currently you can't watch ESPN or ABC games on Disney Plus because of the carriage agreements, and you can't watch them on ESPN Plus because that is like a zombie service that only has original programming, not the ESPN content you actually want. But Disney has said that they are going to launch a standalone ESPN digital service sometime in 2025. And my prediction is that will be in place and operational by the NBA Finals next year. And in 2025, you will be able to watch the NBA Finals on Disney Plus if you subscribe to the ESPN add-on, whatever that costs.
As you know, I'm a huge fan of sports on streaming. But so will you have two options? Will you be able to watch ESPN Plus, or whatever they call it, on Disney Plus, as well as a standalone ESPN app that you can download outside of Disney Plus, and you can watch on that as well?
That is what they are saying. Now, they have not announced exactly how this is all going to work, but given that they now integrate Hulu into Disney Plus and you can essentially pay an upcharge for access to the Hulu tile, I am imagining that there will then be an ESPN tile within the Disney Plus interface. And for whatever the upcharge is, you can add on the ESPN content to your Disney Plus subscription. So it's all within the Disney bundle, so to speak, but with different upcharges for the different kinds of content that you will like. ESPN, obviously very valuable sports content, probably will not be cheap, but you will be able to cut the cord to your cable and watch the NBA by next summer, I believe. And then it'll go from there. And by the end of 2025, they will have ESPN fully integrated. The NFL season, the Monday night games, you'll be able to watch if you subscribe to ESPN on the Disney bundle or on the standalone. That is my prediction.
Disney Plus is the only service that I don't subscribe to, but adding live games on ESPN would definitely probably get me over the hump.
Yeah. I mean, you don't like Hulu?
I am a subscriber to Hulu.
Oh, okay. So you get Hulu. You just don't get Disney Plus because you don't have a small child and you're not into Marvel and Star Wars.
Yeah, they have a good archive, you know, if you want to go back and watch like Indiana Jones or something like that. But yeah. No, I don't have it.
Well, then you will probably be able to subscribe to ESPN as a standalone, or they can upsell you and give you Hulu, ESPN, and throw in Disney Plus all for one price, and boom, it's like the cable bundle all over again. You've got it all, and you.
I will probably do that. Yeah,
exactly. And by then, you'll have a couple kids, and you'll be able to show them old movies as well.
I'm gonna have two kids in a year.
You are. Okay. Yeah, that's my other prediction today. ESPN available for the NBA Finals, and Craig will have two kids by next summer.
I'll let my wife know.
Please do. All right, that's the show for today. I want to thank my guest, Kelly Campbell. I want to thank producer Craig Horlbeck, our editor, Jesse Lopez. And I want to thank you. See you one more time this week.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.